We good to go.
Yep.
What's I always move my mic after we've tested to make sure I sound good. Then I move my mic. What's up? This is Movies On Up. We are not alone. I am not alone. I am joined by my out of this world co-host, Ryan.
I feel like now we're doing an alien-centric episode.
Well, because the tagline is Close Encounters of a Third Kind.
Oh, all right.
So the tagline for this week is We Are Not Alone.
I thought we were doing alien movies.
No, I think we've done that before.
Yeah, we have.
I'm Dave. He's Ryan. We are Movies On Up. The tagline this week, again, We Are Not Alone. If you happen to know what movie that's from...
I think it's Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
If you know what movie that's from, email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Let us know at facebook.com/moviesonup or Twitter @moviesonup. Let us know what the movie is. If you are correct and we pick you, you will win an Out of This World Movies On Up prize package. Congratulations to all the Ghost Dad winners from a few weeks ago. We got some good Ghost Dad response, so thank you for all that.
I hope the good Ghost, I mean, I was just Ghost Dad. That was the only good response you could have given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good.
We got a few.
Great job, guys. And ladies, whatever.
But yeah, this week, it's not favorite alien movies. It's not.
Shit.
It's not favorite Richard Dreyfuss movies. Jurassic World drops this week, and a man who did not direct that movie, named Steven Spielberg, directed.
The first two.
A prequel. The first two prequels to Jurassic World. So
yes, because that's how prequels work.
So we are going to do our favorite Steven Spielberg movies. Usually we try to be like the hip movie guys and leave off the obvious choices. You really can't on a Spielberg list because they're all obvious choices.
I mentioned to Dave that there are no hipster choices for Steven Spielberg. I mean, if you really want to be a dick, you just talk about how much you love Duel, which was a TV movie. So this isn't TV on up. Pretty much every one of his major releases are among the most iconic movies of all time. So we're not going to break any news this week with movies that maybe you never heard about this movie called Jurassic Park, but it's pretty good.
I mean, you can rule out that either of us are having Hook or The Adventures of Tintin as our number one. I think that's probably as out there as you
can get. Spoiler
alert. Yeah. We should have waited because Spielberg's directing the Ready Player One movie. We aren't books on up, but if you want to read a book, read Ready Player One. It's the coolest book you'll ever read in the history of your lifetime.
Of books.
Yes. So Spielberg is perfect to direct that. So I have a feeling once that comes out, I will have a new number one. But before we get to my number one, Ryan, your number five favorite Stevie Spielberg movie.
It's odd that you said this isn't our favorite Aliens movies because my number five is an alien movie. There's a couple Aliens movies that you could maybe look at.
Like
one of
Close
them.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right, that's one of them. That's our tagline for this week. It is not my number five for this week. My number five is from a movie that I like a little bit more than Close Encounters. It does star an alien, E.T. from 1982, directed by, of course, Steven Spielberg. You might find that to be a bit of a theme throughout this episode, starring Henry Thomas and Drew Barrymore. Something that we talked about right at the top of the show is how you can't have a hipster Steven Spielberg choice. And the reason for that is because the guy makes giant movies. They all make a butt ton of money. He's got over $4 billion in domestic gross, which, if you're counting at home, is a lot of money. He's got 27 credits directing that average at the box office $154 million. On average, if he makes a movie and it grosses $155 million, he's like, C+.
And you got to consider that a lot of his directing.
This was from 1982.
Yes, a lot of these are 80s and 90s where $150 million now, not to balk at it, like it's still a nice achievement, but it's not what it was 10 years ago,
no,
15 years
adjusted
ago.
For inflation, we could really do some damage. E.T. at the box office made $435 million.
Like, that's insane. In 1982 dollars. Adjusted for inflation, that's like $7 trillion.
That's a quadrillion, quintillion dollars. That's, you can buy a lot of Reese's Pieces and a lot of Atari games with that much money.
Great Atari game of it, too.
Yeah, I think the movie was slightly better than the Atari game. If I was doing my top five Atari games, I don't think E.T. would.
If you have not seen Atari, : Game Over. It's on Netflix. Fantastic documentary about the E.T. Atari game.
Not directed by Steven Spielberg either. I don't think there's going to be many people out there. If there is somebody that's listening to the sound of my voice right now that has not seen E.T., let me talk to you for just a couple seconds. I'm hoping that you're like a seven-year-old, and if your parents are letting you listen to our podcast, they're either awesome parents or you should probably...
Fuck you, parents.
You should probably be taken from them. But E.T. is one of those movies that we grew up on. It was actually a little before my time. It came out 2 years before I was born. But it's a movie that I think every parent shows their kid. You've got this lovable character of E.T. That bond between E.T. and Elliot is great. The adventure, that's what the whole movie is about. And whether you're young or whether you're old, it does make you feel something. When the government guys are coming to snatch E.T. back.
It's terrifying.
Absolutely. That's the thing. This is a movie about an alien. Now, granted, he's a cute, cuddly alien. But the bad guys, the scary guys, are the people.
The dudes that look like the people that live down the street from you. Like,
right.
That's the... E.T.'s something special because it's... We don't see movies like that now. It's a family adventure that's not catering to the children part of it. What's dubbed as like family adventures now are like those rock movies, Journey to the Center of the Earth or whatever. Those are touted as family adventures, but let's face it, they're clearly for the kids.
They're just adventures that you could bring the whole family to because there aren't like boobs and
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, something like Super 8 I thought was maybe going to be like an E.T. throwback, but my kids wouldn't have liked it. It wasn't.
I think Super 8 was made for guys like us.
It was made for guys that grew up on E.T.,
right,
not necessarily for guys that grew up on E.T. and their kids.
No.
So it's weird because it is an adult movie that's made for kids, if that makes any sense. Like, it's right down the middle. You have parents on the left, kids on the right. It's catered right down the middle.
Not that Steven Spielberg needs me to compliment him, but if you're listening, Steve, this is the highest compliment that I feel like I can pay to you. If this movie would come out in 2012, it would be made by Pixar. That's what they've done so well, is make movies that kids love and enjoy them, you know, on their level, but the parents
enjoy.
Love it equally, if not more, because there literally is something there for everyone. This is a great movie. It's my number five, and that just kind of speaks to this guy. When I sit and think about it, if I had to list my favorite directors, Spielberg probably wouldn't be one of the first ones that comes to mind, but after I did this list, I was like, what the fuck's wrong with me?
Here's the thing with Steven Spielberg, is people like him, and to make a football analogy, somebody like Peyton Manning. You watch Peyton Manning, and it just, he's too good. It's hard to appreciate how good he is. That if you ask, like, oh, who's the best quarterback you've ever, you know, who's your favorite quarterback to watch? A lot of people aren't going to say Peyton Manning because he's so good and it looks so easy to him. Steven Spielberg is pretty much like that. If you ask me my favorite director's movies to watch, like you, I'm naming off a lot of names before I even think of Steven Spielberg movies. But every movie he makes is damn near a masterpiece. Even the ones I don't like Munich. People crapped on Munich a lot. Munich's a gorgeously made movie. And that's
if that's made by anybody else.
Yeah.
It's the best movie they've ever made.
Yeah. And like Lincoln, like I didn't care about Lincoln. It's a wonderful movie.
I think it won some awards.
Yeah. Like it's, I mean, his B-sides, I would consider like War Horse a B-side. Best picture nominee. So, I mean, like the dude doesn't miss really.
I think we just take it for granted. That
and that's kind of my point.
Right.
I didn't say those exact words, but
that's what you were getting at.
He makes it look so easy that you don't appreciate it just because it's just so easy.
He's been doing it for so long.
Yeah. But
what's your number five?
My number five, believe it or not, Jurassic Park is not the first prequel he ever made. Before that, in 1984, he directed a prequel called Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Not really a prequel. It just takes place before the first Indiana Jones movie. But that's my number five, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I think of the Indiana Jones ones, this one's not the best. I think it's quite possibly the most iconic, though. I feel like a lot of people's memories of the Indiana Jones movies, most of them might come from this movie. As an overall Indiana Jones movie, though, I think of the three Indiana Jones movies in existence, just the three.
This one seemed weird. It seemed out on its own. For starters, the whole PG-13 the reason there's a PG-13 right here.
This and Gremlins.
Yeah. You can thank both of those. Not that we're going to get into the other two right now, but you know, this one, not real heavy on the Nazis. I'm not saying that every movie I watch has to be heavy on the Nazis, because E.T. didn't
it
have
helps.
A bunch. Yeah. My next two, they are a little Nazi heavy. So that felt a little bit different. It definitely had more of a horror vibe. I don't know that I was necessarily scared at all when I watched one or three. They seem like really cool kind of adventures. This one, you know, when you got a guy reaching into another guy and pulling out his heart and showing it to him, I mean, that, you know, that'll affect you as a youth. But when you said the most iconic Indiana Jones things for me, obviously Short Round, love him in that movie.
The monkey brains.
Yeah, that whole feast was really kind of disgusting. And then the scene on the bridge, he crazy! And then, you know, the alligators just ripping those guys and rolling around in them. I mean, those are obviously all from the second movie. It might be, and maybe it's because it was different. It didn't have a lot of Nazis, and it felt more like a horror movie than an adventure movie, that it kind of sticks out. But this is my second favorite of the Jones trilogy.
The Jones trilogy is a weird one because...
And it's only a trilogy. Do you hear me?
Yeah, we'll get into the others later, but they're three completely different movies with the same dude. So Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom was my number five. Ryan, your number four.
My number four came out July 24th, 1998, to about half of what E.T. did, $216 million. It was Saving Private Ryan, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Tom Hanks, Matt Damon, Tom Sizemore. There have been, give or take, a million movies about World War II. Trust me, I did the math. If we extrapolate that out, there have probably been several million movies about war in general. You have a lot that kind of deal with the war, or whatever war there is at the center from a historical perspective. Some kind of try and tell the stories of, you know, the soldiers that were fighting the war. Some use war for the backdrop for other events. This one actually does a little bit of each. You're telling the story of a group of soldiers on kind of the front lines, and they're tasked with rescuing one particular soldier, not because he's, you know, got the secret Death Star plans, but you know, because his brothers were killed. And the United States government wanted to make sure that at least one of the Ryan brothers made it home. So that's kind of a smaller story within a bigger story there. And they did an incredible job of making all of the guys in this unit matter. We talk about it a lot during horror movies, where the best horror movies make all the deaths count because you know the characters. Maybe you don't necessarily remember all their names, but you can definitely remember them as being characters and not cannon fodder. And this movie did an incredible job with that. Not to mention probably the most visceral experience you could have in a movie theater is watching the Normandy invasion there. I mean, it's obviously, you know, I'm guessing most people have probably seen it, but it's very graphic. I've never experienced anything like that, and I hope to Christ that I never do. But to be able to put that on film and have it not necessarily be the thing that jumps out about this movie, I mean, it's definitely a big part of it. But I remember Tom Hanks at the end basically going one-on-one with a tank. Just the stories of the guys in the unit. I mean, it's an incredibly moving movie, and that's... Maybe it's understating it, but where Spielberg is tremendous, the one place, yeah. The storytelling is phenomenal. It's absolutely second to none. We've heard stories. We've heard 100,000 stories about World War II. And even if you were a World War II buff, you may not be able to name all the World War II movies. But I think if you asked anyone, you know, what are the best and what are their favorites, this may not be the top of the list, but it's going to be on everybody's because it's, to me, it's that quintessential World War II film.
Yeah, and I'm not a big war movie fan. I generally don't enjoy them, but I can appreciate the mastery of this movie, like the beauty of the filmmaking in this. That Normandy invasion is quite possibly one of the best made sequences I've ever seen on film ever. And then just all the way down the cast, Vin Diesel is really good in it, obviously Tom Hanks, but what's really impressive about this and what really speaks to Spielberg is he's always been able to do it. You talk about Temple of Doom feeling like a horror movie, still pretty damn funny at times. Like this, it's a war movie, but it still had heart. It still had humor. Like the Nathan Fillion scene is great. Other directors try that, and it seems so out of place.
Shoehorned in.
Yeah, but it just fits, and it's a phenomenal, phenomenal movie. My number four comes from 2002, and it's actually more relevant today than I was thinking because it's got a TV show coming out of it. It is 2002's Minority Report, based on a Philip K. Dick novel starring Tom Cruise, Max von Sydow, Samantha Morton, Frank Grillo, others. Awesome movie. It took me a couple watches to appreciate it. This one I'll give Jason West credit for making me watch it. He loved it when we were roommates. I was not a fan, but he watched it a few times, and it kind of not only grew on me, but I didn't just grow to tolerate it. I grew to love it. The world that he builds. And that's the big thing with sci-fi is you have to be able to build the world. You have to be able to make the world believable. And Spielberg does that. It's a hard premise to sell, but he kind of nails it. Tom Cruise, I love science fiction Tom Cruise. I don't know that Tom Cruise has made a sci-fi movie that I don't enjoy. And he's really good in this. The spiders are creepy. The eyeball stuff. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in this movie. I sometimes honestly forget that it's a Steven Spielberg movie just because it's so different. It's not your epic, iconic movie. It really isn't. I'd say of my top five, it's easily the least well-known.
Even with that, if that is the case, you go up to, like, a random person on the street and say, like, hey, man, what do you think of Minority Report? And they're not going to look at you like, wait, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I still think that a vast majority of people, even if they haven't seen the movie, are at least somewhat familiar with it. And that's his, like, quote-unquote lesser-known stuff?
Yeah, and I would think people probably remember it as a Tom Cruise sci-fi movie and not so much as a Spielberg movie. Yeah. But it's good, and it's another one. Philip K. Dick is one of those with such great ideas, but with sci-fi, a great idea with poor execution is a terrible idea. And we've seen some terrible Philip K. Dick adaptations, and we've seen some great ones. And this Minority Report is definitely one of the great ones.
My number three is, by a large margin, from a box office standpoint, it is the smallest that I have on my list, and it is below average by a significant amount for Spielberg. So it's, I guess, it's a below average Steven Spielberg movie. It came out February 4th of 1994, and it turned out to be an Academy Award winner that year for Best Director and Best Picture. It was Schindler's List, directed, of course, by Steven Spielberg, starring Liam Neeson, Ralph Fiennes, and Ben Kingsley. This is the fourth time he was nominated for an Oscar, so it took him three losses before he finally got his win for this one. I would say that from a film standpoint, this is probably the best movie that's on my list. And occasionally, we'll talk about movies that are great and you need to see them, but maybe you don't need to see them a bunch of times. And I would say that this fits squarely into that category. Where I talked about Saving Private Ryan, how you can have a war movie, quote-unquote war movie, where the war is really just a backdrop, which is exactly what you have here in Schindler's List. World War II is a backdrop to a smaller story, not small by any means to the people that were affected by this, where you have this business owner in Oscar Schindler, who was, he's not your prototypical hero. He's not even, you know, your prototypical good guy. He's kind of a shithead, sort of. Your typical businessman, I guess, who really, when confronted with some real disgusting stuff, goes out of his way to be a relatively decent dude. And I think it kind of shows that even maybe shitty dudes have parts about them that aren't shitty, to say the least. It's interesting that, you know, this is a story that Spielberg waited, I think, like a decade to do. He wanted to do it in the mid-'80s.
Follow-up E.T.
Right, exactly. You know, we just did this kind of heartwarming movie about aliens. Now what I really want to do, you know the Holocaust? You familiar with that? Yeah, I'd like to make a black and white movie about the Holocaust. On paper, that doesn't really sound like a page-turner, but this is another one that you read about it in the history books, but it's maybe not in the same way as visceral as, you know, storming the beaches of Normandy and saving Private Ryan. But to really kind of see, you know, what these Jewish people were being put through at the time. And that's, he does an incredible job of really putting you right next to them. And hopefully that's as close as anybody's ever going to get to that kind of behavior. But it's just, like I said, I've only seen it once, but that's enough. So many things will just stick with you for years and years. And there again, it's a sign of a great filmmaker. There's nothing in that movie that was wasted. Everything is for a reason. It makes an impression. It makes you feel something. It's long movie, but it's right where it needs to be.
My number three, we're going to stick with the Nazi theme and go back to similar to my number five. This is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade from 1989. We talked about Temple of Doom feeling more like a horror movie, but still had comic moments. This is just a straight-up comic adventure. The scariness of it is definitely gone. The adventure is ramped up, and the humor is definitely dialed up to 11 in this one. You add Sean Connery. You have the awesome opening with River Phoenix as young Indiana Jones. Just adds to the whole experience. This was them kind of finding. We talk about how all three of the Indiana Jones movies were different. The first one was like an action movie that had some humor in it. The second one was a horror movie that had some humor in it. This kind of took everything people loved from those.
This was a comedy that had some action in it.
Yeah, this just ramped it way up. It might have been a little overdone. I mean, it's nonstop just one-liners and wisecracks and stuff. But it works because it's fun. Sean Connery is great. This is the kind of gimmick that three movies deep, now we realize that there's a father that has never been mentioned in the other two. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that could be just thrown at the wall and not stick. But Connery kind of brought it, and he came to play. And the dynamic between him and Harrison Ford was fantastic. No Karen Allen in this one, which I felt was lacking, but just a lot of fun. It's the fun Nazis. It's a more fun Nazi movie than your number three.
Yeah, that's for sure. The globetrotting element kind of reminded me a lot of a Bond movie, and maybe that's just because, you know, we're watching the original Bond do that as well, but definitely a comedy. I think they were really starting to maybe find their audience there. And it's strange because that was the third one, and then that was the last one ever made. Ever?
Yeah, never again another.
No, never again to be revisited. You'd think that maybe by the third one, they're like, all right, this is kind of popular with the kids. And then we
kind of found our formula now.
Yeah, and then we're done. We're never going to make another one ever again. My number two is a movie that they probably should have done that with as well. They absolutely hit it out of the park with the first one. And then, to put it lightly, shit got sour. It is from 1975, came out June 20th. To $260 million, directed by the godfather of the summer blockbuster, the tentpole film, if you will, Steven Spielberg. It is Jaws, starring Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, and Richard Dreyfuss. Many of the movies that I have on here are big-time summer releases. But the idea of a blockbuster, the idea of we can put a movie in the summer when people are generally out and about, we can put it in the summer and people will go, and it can make a ton of money because it's not, you know, battling against everything else that's being released for the awards. I guess if you think about it, for a movie like Jaws, summer's absolutely the perfect time to release this movie. It really did scare the shit out of people. People stayed the hell out of the water because they were convinced that Jaws was out there and was going to eat them. If we think back to, like, The Blair Witch, when that came out, I think most folks knew that that was a movie, but they still weren't 100% sure.
You saw a lot less college documentaries that took place in the woods that summer.
Exactly. People stayed the hell out of the woods because The Blair Witch was there. People since 1975 have stayed the hell out of the water because Jaws might be there. And if a movie can kind of make you think twice, you know damn well it's a movie, but if it can make you think twice, then obviously it's doing something there. And we can thank Jaws for having the opportunity to spend a ton of our time this summer, maybe specifically, in movie theaters. I kind of think, to me, it's a lot about Star Wars. They've all been, except for this one, the upcoming one, they've all been, you know, summer releases. But even then, Jaws was 2 years before Star Wars. So to me, when we do our summer preview episode, if not for Jaws and the success it had,
we're not doing them.
Right, we wouldn't have son of a bitch, that's a pain in the ass episode to do. So screw you, Steven Spielberg. I think you owe me a dollar or something. But if it weren't for this movie, and then it's a great movie too, but the impact that it had, it really did change the dynamic of what movies get made, when they get released. It really did change a lot in, you know, an industry that we sort of care about.
Jaws is also my number two. It's just a phenomenal movie. And this goes back to your second build character, essentially, or outside of, you know, Roy Scheider, the next biggest character in that.
Is the shark?
Is the shark. And they went, it's all, I mean, obviously there wasn't CGI in 75, but it's all practical and it felt real. And it wasn't just a shark. Like, Jaws was a character. It wasn't just like, oh, there's this shark eating everybody. No, Jaws was built up as a character.
It was a movie monster.
Yeah, I mean, it was
like
Wolfman,
King Kong,
it was
Frankenstein. Right.
Like, it had its personality. We learned later on in the franchise that it's able to hunt down family and follow them to Jamaica. It had its personalities. It had its quirks. It had its strengths, its weaknesses. It wasn't just a beast. Like, it was an actual foe. And it worked awesome. And this might be blasphemous, but Jaws is the kind of movie that I'm for remaking it. Like, I'm for a modern, like an updated version of it in the right hands, not as a cash grab, but it doesn't really need it. Still good. I mean, there's still sand at the beach and there's still water. So, I mean, there's not much that's changed there.
Maybe
but
the shorts are a little longer and the hair's not as coiffed.
In the right hands, I think it could be a good movie now, like remade and updated without really hurting the original, because it's still good.
I don't think it hurt the original, but I mean, could they do a remake? Sure. I really don't think that it needs to be updated because the story is so simple. Obviously, the boat would probably be a little fancier now and the guys would dress differently, but you know, you're still man versus shark. Is basically what it comes down to. And, yeah, they could CG
the
shark now. But
see,
I don't want to CG shark.
I think that's what I want, though, is just a man versus shark. Because, all right, Deep Blue Sea, we had man versus genetically engineered sharks. That grocery store shark movie, you had man versus sharks, but in a grocery store. Like, this is just man versus shark. Where at? Oh, on the beach. In the ocean. Where they should be.
In fairness.
Like, open water is the closest thing.
We did get... two man versus sharks, multiple sharks in the Sharknado franchise, which
third
was,
one coming out,
I think,
summer.
Probably the best shark movie since Jaws.
The Reef, an Australian movie. It's a slow burn. The Reef and open water, decent shark movies, but they're no Jaws.
Or
Deep Blue Sea, or grocery store shark movie, which I legit loved.
So that brings us to the number one then, right?
Mm-hmm.
My number one is a number one. I guess Dave would probably call it a prequel, maybe. I don't know. It came out June 12th of 1981, $248 million, directed by Steven Spielberg. It was Raiders of the Lost Ark, starring Harrison Ford, Karen Allen, and John Rhys-Davies. Spielberg's not really known for franchises. He really only directed the sequels to this and just the first sequel to Dave's number one. This would be the exception to the rule, this and that one. But when he does franchises, they're pretty damn iconic. If it weren't for Indiana Jones, I'm not really sure that Harrison Ford would have been able to shed the Corellian bloodstripe pants on a certain freighter pilot. He would be forever known as Han Solo, just like Mark Hamill is forever known as Luke Skywalker. Carrie Fisher will always be Princess Leia, and Peter Mayhew, God help him, will always be Chewbacca. But
Warwick Davis is always Wicket.
I might argue that some folks might have him pegged for the leprechaun too, but I'm really okay with either of those
He's
things.
He's always Willow to me.
I feel like the character, though, of Indiana Jones was absolutely perfect for Harrison Ford, and he did such a great job of kind of letting his natural personality, like his gruffness, his comedic timing, which we talked a little bit about when we did our Harrison Ford episode, kind of come to the forefront. You mentioned iconic Indiana Jones moments, and we mentioned it in the Harrison Ford one, and I love it so much, I'm going to mention it again. For me, it's exactly why I love that character and why I love the franchise. And it was just Harrison Ford being sick, shooting. He was just tired. So when they're in the middle of the street and the swordsman shows up and he's going through all of his moves, really letting Indy know that he's in for a world of shit, he simply reaches in to his holster, shoots the guy, and is done with it. I think it's so brilliant. Rather than go through all this bullshit, because you know, as an audience member, we're sitting there, well, why the hell didn't he just shoot him? Like, why go through all this bullshit? Why have him drop the gun? No, fuck it. He's just going to shoot him. And I love that. It was a great adventure. Nazis are scary to begin with. You have this trying to find the Ark of the Covenant and then releasing that shit, melting Nazis. That's something that'll stick with you. Obviously, it's the first one. I think that it's the best in that it's got the humor, it's got the action, and everything seems to be equal parts. It's not like 3 where you can call it a comedy with a little of something thrown in. No, I mean, it's a great adventure action with the perfect kind of dry humor that I like thrown in. And to me, it had the best character. When I was a kid, watching a lot of these movies, I didn't go out in the backyard and pretend I was Elliot. I didn't pretend that I was Jaws. I pretended to be Indiana Jones. And Spielberg had a lot of movies that I was watching as a kid and as an adult. And to me, he's never, I guess we have to give a little bit of credit to George Lucas for that as well, but they've never given me a character that has impacted me as much as Indiana Jones. And that is why it is number one on my list.
I think Raiders is the best made of the 3 Indiana Jones movies. It wasn't my favorite, but it's the best made. And I just love that two of the most iconic moments in Harrison Ford's film career both came from
improvised
him
improvised and being tired.
Yeah, just him being tired. That he wanted to finish filming, and I know came from him being tired of doing so many takes. My number one, it is a prequel to the movie coming out this week. It's the prequel to Jurassic World. It is Jurassic Park. It's not just my favorite Steven Spielberg movie. This is one of my favorite movies ever, starring Ariana Richards, Jeff Goldblum, Sam Neill, Laura Dern.
I like how Ariana Richards gets top. That's the first and last time she's ever been top billed for anything.
I don't need to go on and talk about how good Jurassic Park is. We did a whole episode of it a couple years ago. It's amazing. The mix of practical and CGI. And it's some of the best CGI I've ever seen 20 years later. And it's the reason I'm excited about Jurassic World. I love Jurassic Park so much that, yeah, all right. 2, I didn't care for. 3 was, but I'll take another one. I'll keep going back there. I don't care. I love that first visit so much that I'll just keep going back to Jurassic Park any chance I get just because of that first ride being so much fun. And everything about it. It's that mix of humor. It's a horror movie. I mean, Jurassic Park at its core is a horror movie, but it's a lot of fun and it's wonderful. Like, that's such a weird word to use, but you feel the wonder and the amazement. The first time they see the dinosaurs, like, you feel that. And something we haven't really touched on, we haven't mentioned at all, but the score of not just this movie, but pretty much every Spielberg movie.
John Williams.
Yeah, is perfect. And I think this is the perfect blend of Spielberg's direction and the masterful score. I mean, it's an iconic score.
It's so iconic they bring it back for the trailer for the new one. And you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, and it's just such a great movie. The performances are fantastic. It's when it wants to be scary, it's scary as hell. When it wants to be funny, it's funny. It's just a fantastic all-around movie.
Before we get off the score aspect, I was reading about Schindler's List, and when John Williams was approached by Spielberg to do the score for the movie, he really didn't want to do it. He said, this story deserves a much better composer. And Spielberg looked at him, and he was like, I know, but they're all dead. So basically, like, you're the best we've got, so make it happen. And just the movies that we have here on the list, from E.T., Jaws, the Indiana Jones movies, Jurassic Park, those scores, I think, are some of the most iconic ever. It'd be interesting to do, and we've never done this, and I don't know if we necessarily would, but if we were to do a John Williams episode where we just listed our favorite movie scores, that could be really, really tough. But I'm glad you mentioned that Jurassic Park is sort of a horror movie, because, I mean, that's essentially what it is. I remember as a kid, as most kids, I think we love dinosaurs, probably in the way that we love sharks, too. Big animals that are kind of dangerous, have a lot of teeth. I think we're all just kind of, maybe from our dinosaur lizard brains, coded to be fascinated with these creatures. And goodness knows that was not the first movie ever made about dinosaurs. But at the time, I remember, you know, CG was kind of in infancy. And a lot of what was done by Spielberg in Jurassic Park is why CG was able to advance and why we ended up getting some movies further on down the road. But, I mean, those dinosaurs, when they were CG, because we had seen practical, and the practical effects were magnificent, but when they were done CG, they looked so good. And I don't know if it's just me having fond memories, but even when we watched it a couple of years ago, it still looks good.
It looks amazing. Like, it still looks fantastic. Like, you look at a lot of the movies that come out now, and like RIPD or John Carter or stuff like that, and it's just like, you're 20 years after
this. After 5 years, that CG looks bad.
I just don't get, like, the technology was there in 94. Why are we going backwards? Because rarely am I blown away by the CG now as I am. I mean, occasionally, like, I thought the CG in Guardians was fantastic. And that's what I expect, is that they looked real. Rocket and Groot looked real, just like the dinosaurs looked real.
It's a really good flick. I definitely remember, you know, that summer that movie came out. We talked about, you know, Jaws being the summer blockbuster. I mean, Jurassic Park's the same way.
I didn't go to any dinosaur theme park that summer.
I don't want to go to any zoos because I saw what happens. Cages can't hold them animals. But, I mean, that was the movie everybody was talking about that summer. You weren't, and I remember I wasn't, one of the first people that got to see Jurassic Park. I had to beg and beg and beg. And eventually, I got to go see it. But what Spielberg does, you know, when he releases a movie, generally speaking, it kind of gets into the social consciousness, and that's, you know, what people are talking about. He's got that kind of impact. I mean, there are movie stars when they have a movie. Maybe it's because maybe the movie stars work more than the directors do. I'm not real sure, because it takes a little more time to direct a project than it does to just kind of act and want to move on to the next. But I don't know of an actor or an actress that, whenever they release something, it's like, oh shit, you kind of might want to stop what you're doing because, you know, there's a new Johnny Depp movie out. Or, I mean, fill in the blank, whoever you think.
That's why the Ready Player One news, like, floored me, because here's this book that I love, and it's a nerd book. I mean, it's a book about pop culture and video games in the 80s and 90s. Like, it's a straight up nerd book. So, you know, when they announce that they're making a movie of it, you can give it to any up-and-coming director and kind of make it their breakout thing, and I'll be on board. But for Spielberg, who at this point in his career is making Lincoln, War Horse, like, everything he makes is a Best Picture nomination, to go and want to make this nerd movie, like, for people like me, it was awesome. And I mean, like,
He knows his audience.
Yeah, like, I still follow...
Which is everyone.
Like, I follow, you know, movie news still. We don't do news episodes, but I still follow... And no news has shocked me like that, because the fact that Spielberg wanted to do that movie blew my mind, and I cannot wait for it, because it's going to take a lot of licensing to do it right. And if anybody can get those licenses to work, it's damn Spielberg. So you didn't really have any also-rans, did you?
I don't think there's any point in having also-rans for a Steven Spielberg list.
No, I mean, the ones that I left off my list, Close Encounters of a Third Kind, which was our tagline for this week, Adventures of Tintin, I liked. I don't think it did nearly as well as people expected. And then Hook will always have a place in my heart just because of my love for Peter Pan. But this is one of those where, like, we're leaving off a ton of iconic Steven Spielberg movies that we haven't even mentioned. And
The Color Purple comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's just big-time movies of his. I mean, we could run down his IMDb just to cover them all, but what's the point? I mean, this time I know we missed some of your favorite Steven Spielberg movies. I mean, the dude's been working nonstop. for 30, 40 years, 40 years almost. So Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, like AI, like all big time movies that we didn't even mention. But let us know what your favorites are. Email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. But yeah, this was our favorite Steven Spielberg movies in anticipation for Jurassic World, directed by Colin Trevorrow, which I am very excited for. So we will be back next week with whatever next week's episode is. And until then,
keep it up.